Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. The only person you need in the morning other than your spouse. Here's Jeff Blair.
Now, it's sure been a week to think about what it means to be a Canadian, hasn't it? You know, my senses will all get a little more closure over the weekend. You got time with family, time away from work. For many, it'll be time to gather around the TV set for Hockey Night in Canada, which has always served as something of a national rallying point. And I'm betting the national anthems in Ottawa and here at the ACC will be something. And I know the coach's corner will be something this weekend. But Thursday presented us with an opportunity to think a bit about another Canadian icon. Steve Nash will not play for the Los Angeles Lakers this season due to a degenerative back issue that most likely marks the end of his transformative career, a career that saw Nash become the country's most influential athlete of my lifetime, and I'm sure for many of you as well. You know, Dr. Naismith is a Canadian who invented basketball. We all know that. But Steve Nash is effectively the guy who invented Canadian basketball as we know it today. When the NBA starts next week, there will be more than a dozen Canadian-born players on NBA rosters, all of them having entered the league after Nash. This was inevitable in some ways. We know about the societal factors, immigration patterns, cost of hockey, scarcity of ice time, our growing urban concentration. We know that's helped make basketball more and more and more the choice of our country's premier athletes. But while all that was going on, there was Nash serving as a tangible symbol of the fact that the door was open. Playing in all-star games, winning MVP awards, doing commercials. Nash didn't have many of the benefits of the current crop of Canadian players, especially in terms of early identifiability by scouts and colleges. Hell, I'll tell you what, at one point, Steve Nash came closer to being a baseball player than he did to being a basketball player. But yet, he still managed to carve out a career. He created opportunity for others. And for those who followed him, it was merely a matter of taking advantage of opportunity. The truth is that Nash has become more American than Canadian in recent years. He's been living in L.A., lives in New York. You know about the whole Raptors thing. But you know what? That's kind of seemed okay. We've spotted him that right after all he's done. He's just another Canadian who's gone south to make his bones. He's like Mike Myers or any of the Canadians that have gone on to find success south of the border. The simple truth is Steve Nash changed the way we, and more importantly, others, think of Canadian athletes, even as he demonstrated the principles we like to think are universal among our athletes. Toughness, resilience, all that stuff. We're going to talk hockey right now with Gord Stellick, but we're also going to acknowledge that Steve Nash, more than any other athlete in the past 50 years, moved the national sports narrative beyond just hockey.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
Long may you run. Long may you run. Although these changes have come. With your chrome heart shining in the sun.
The Maple Leafs will get back at it Saturday at the Air Canada Centre against the Boston Bruins. With the Bruins, well, the Bruins without Zdeno Chara for anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks after he injured his leg delivering a hit in the Islanders' John Tavares Thursday night. This, of course, the Bruins were a team that was already forced to deal away Johnny Boychuk due to salary cap considerations. They're a team that was forced to undergo some transition, some of it planned, but a lot of it in some ways unplanned as well. Gord Stellick is the host of our Leafs Nation pre and post game. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Gord Stellick joins us on this Friday morning. Good morning, Mr. Stellick.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Blair. Yeah, I like, you know, obviously going to talk hockey, and the chair injuries are a real significant one. But, you know, you mentioned Steve Nash, and maybe Larry Walker is the Canadian equivalent to a degree, or Fergie Jenkins in baseball. But, you know, we talk sports 24/7, and we hype a lot of things. And that's a great thing about Steve Nash. He just was always the guy under the radar, right? He was the guy. No hype. Then you said, holy crap, this guy's won the NBA MVP award twice, and all these kind of things. So I as you said that, you know, you're talking about it. It's true as far as a Canadian going on to certain heights in a sport. He's probably without peer.
Well, I tried to make the point. I mean, I'm not going to get in the argument about who the greatest Canadian athlete of the past 50 years is, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, Wayne Gretzky dominated his sport as well. You know, what I was trying to get at, Gord, is that hockey was going to be our national sport with or without Wayne Gretzky. That's not to take anything away from Wayne Gretzky.
And the top guys, yeah.
Yeah, and the difference is that Steve Nash kind of helped put another option out there. Another option out there for kids, which is great. And that's fine. Just as you said, as Larry Walker did. Larry Walker won an MVP award, and all of a sudden kids who wanted to play baseball in BC thought, well, you know what, if I can get myself identified at an early age and get into a program. And that's the thing. The thing that guys like Walker and Nash, the reason I'm so impressed with what they did is they don't have the same thing kids have now. You know, Larry Walker was discovered at a baseball tournament in Saskatchewan. He was a guy who was a failed junior hockey goalie. We know all that. He was discovered at a baseball tournament in Saskatchewan. And he didn't have a lot of the things that the Canadian baseball players have now. You know, the national team, a national team that goes down to the Dominican Republic and plays against legitimate major league prospects, a national team that goes down to Florida for 2 weeks every couple of months to play against prospects from other organizations. And that's why I have a lot of time for guys like Walker and Nash. You know, it's just they had to do it a different way, and yet once they did it, they opened the door for others. And now it's just a matter. And the opportunity's there. If you want to play basketball, baseball, you want to play hockey, the opportunity's there now. If you don't make it, you can't say, well, no one gave me a chance. They'll give you a chance, and it's because of guys like Nash and Walker.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's focus, though, on the Leafs. They're going to get back on the ice. I think a lot of people I just think Saturday, for a hockey fan, I think there's a lot of hockey fans in this country. I think there's a lot of Canadians in this country that are kind of looking forward to Saturday, not because we want to forget what happened, but I think it's going to bring a little bit of closure to some of the events in Ottawa for a large percentage of the population. Not having Zdeno Chara in the lineup for the Bruins for 4 to 6 weeks. I don't know. He's the one guy in that team I don't think they can replace.
Well, absolutely. And even last night, once he got hurt in the game against the New York Islanders, and there were a couple goals. I mean, the Islanders in the game, and you already see a case, not just with Cherikov having to make the decision on Boychuk, that you got a couple, you know, even running around, that kind of thing, and leaving Islander players open in front of the net. The Leafs, it's always been a storyline with Boston because of the Kessel's lack of success for a while, and then, of course, he exploded in the playoffs. The playoffs, that whole seven-game series becomes a storyline, and, you know, Chara's very prominent in all that. And, you know, the one thing he is, Jeff, like, he's only missed 21 games in his career with the Boston Bruins. He was on the island before in Ottawa and that, but he's a durable guy. He's 37 years old. He plays about 80 games a season, so he doesn't get injured very often, and we always think, he's the one guy, Jeff, that you know, whether it's Kessel or whatever the opposing team is, Chara's on his own agenda that when a certain guy gets on the ice, he gets on the ice. I mean, they're always, always matching that particular thing. And against the Leafs, he's had considerable success. And this is a real significant blow for the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we talk about a shutdown defenseman, shutdown forward. Zdeno Chara is a shutdown player. That's exactly what he is. He is... He's almost like a one-man defensive scheme.
Well, and you know, it's funny, the 6'9" thing, you kind of, you know, it sort of was thrown that it's a bit of a, you know, he's kind of that gangly tall guy. Well, he's not. He's 6'9" who plays like he, or whatever his height is, like he's 6'2". I mean, that's the thing. He's got, it's like what I was great about Mario Lemieux was being a bigger guy that played like a smaller guy, had the skills like, you know, the guy same with a guy of Gretzky size. And that's what Chara does. Boy, it's all encompassing, and the height's a part of it, but you know, every other element. And when the Bruins went out in the playoffs a couple of years ago, didn't know if Chara was hurt or not, but he wasn't having a strong playoff, and it was kind of like as go Chara in a lot of ways. So do the Boston Bruins, and you know, they've had a lot of power up front. They got great forwards up front. They've had a great and interesting goaltending when it's Tim Thomas or Tuukka Rask. But you need the stud D, and you know, every now and then he's sort of been a bit unappreciated when it comes to the Norris Trophy. You get a PK Subban 1 year with all the flash and panache and that, and Chara, you forget, it's been a long time being that kind of elite defenseman. So, you know, similar to Nicholas Lidstrom's career in some ways, different kind of D, but that kind of impact.
Gord Stellick joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The Leafs and Bruins will play tomorrow night on Hockey Night in Canada, and Gord, what do the Leafs have to do, or what can they do in particular to take advantage of Zdeno Chara's absence?
Boy, you know, and last night doing a couple of games on Hockey Central, you see like the Columbus Blue Jackets and teams like that, and Detroit came back and beat Pittsburgh. So, I mean, these are the teams that the Leafs were vying for the playoffs with, those last playoff spots, and they seem to both improve themselves. So, you know, that shows what's out there that way. I think the thing with I just think Chara being there, he was always in their head to a largest degree in Phil Kessel's head, although that, you know, the playoffs extricated it from them. But I looked at the game last night without Chara. That's a huge thing where you can start jamming the net, you know, create more confusion in the offensive zone, more confusion in front of that, more tenacity on the puck, because, you know, without that guy, you know, he plays 30 minutes a game, and he's the brick in front of that. I was doing it with PJ Sock last night, and really surprised about just, you know, you got young guys like McQuaid and guys like that just almost abdicating the front of the net, mm-hmm. like just two guys going after the puck. Those kind of things which weren't a part of Boston Bruin hockey, and with, you know, Boychuk is one decision they had to make because they had Chara is why they made that decision, and now they're both gone. So if you don't take advantage of it, then you can't capitalize on it. I think that's where you've really got to have that energy and work and compete level in the offensive zone.
You know, Gord, one of the things people in Boston are already saying, of course, they're already looking at Dougie Hamilton and saying, well, this is, you know, Dougie Hamilton's going to have to shoulder more of the load right now. But with all due respect to Dougie Hamilton, who's a terrific player and is going to be an even better player as his career goes on, he's just not the same. He's not the same. He doesn't present the same physical obstacle to opponents that Zdeno Chara does.
Yeah, no, and a big part of his game is his offensive skills, same in junior. And, you know, just whether, I mean, you look at Chris Pronger when he was playing, or just that kind of big stud that uses his side, is smart, is skilled, all those things. And that's the part they're going to miss. And that's the part that doesn't show up on the score sheet. And, you know, when a team wins the Stanley Cup, I mean, those are the kind of guys that are why they win it. And Boston has won it the last couple of years, and Chara's the guy. Yeah, nobody in the Bruins' cases, nobody can replace that kind of role with them. That's for sure. But that's why they have to, if it's Dougie Hamilton or whoever, remember and focus and emphasize more the defensive responsibilities, because they're going to be out there in those situations that they weren't used to being out there when Chara's around.
The Leafs scored. I was going to say they seem to be a bit of a team in transition. I mean, that's really no surprise, but we saw Randy Carlyle use seven defensemen against the Islanders, and I made the point. I mean, he's used it before. He went with using seven defensemen a great deal down the stretch last year and had a little bit of success with it. So it's not as if he's kind of reinventing the wheel there, but, you know, we're hearing talk now and it's kind of become part of the dialogue that perhaps maybe you want to move James Van Riemsdyk down. Maybe you want to rearrange the top two lines a little bit. The one thing everybody seems to agree is that the Leafs have got a tremendous third line and that nobody's going to touch that. That's the third rail right now in addition to the third line. But how much change do you think we will see in the Leafs, let's say in the next 10 days? Are we going to see some line combinations that are really going to interest us, that are really going to intrigue us? Or do you think it's going to be largely status quo?
I think it's going to be largely status quo in the next 10 days. You know, The couple of lows have been a little bit too low, and that's what you want to try to guard against. But, you know, they had the guns a-blazing again in against the Islanders, and it's funny here. You know, here's Phil Kessel, who's having an indifferent season, and then he's up there in, among the top scorers again. Like, you know, you would think if you talk to some people that he's having an off year, and that's just the way it goes with him. When you bring up that other line, like Leo Komarov so far has been the great reacquisition. Everything they missed, he's brought back to it. David Clarkson, I love seeing that because, you have another year like you did last year, and you can get buried. Your career can be irreparably on the downhill slope, but I give the guy full marks. I said this to Mark Osborne. I said, name great teams that go all the way that have 7D. I still think you've got, and again, we over-talked the fourth line because the fourth line's not the difference maker, but it is part of what teams, you know, whether it was Boston or Chicago or Los Angeles, that kind of depth. And 7D, to me, it takes ice time away from defensemen who are used to a little bit more ice time. It's hard to distribute it. So I don't like the 7D, even though they got a goal out of it when they put Kessel with got a bonus shift out of it, because that's what they were doing with only two guys on the fourth line. I'd like to get a bit of an energy line, a spark line that way going. But I think in Randy Carlyle's case, he's gonna keep the guns, you know, the top guys going and keep that big line together. So I don't see any changes, say, over the next 10 days, Jeff.
Gord Stellick joins us, pardon me, in the Jeff Blair Show, 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. And ask the question, ahead of the Leafs-Bruins matchup at the Air Canada Centre, who are the irreplaceable players in the NHL? Come up with some names for me. Gord and I both, I think, agree that Zdeno Chara is effectively the most irreplaceable player on the Bruins. Who's the Leafs' most irreplaceable player, or the Canadiens, or whoever your favorite team is? 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. We had a conversation with Renaud Lavoie of TVA Sports on Thursday, Gord, and Renaud was speculating, and he'd been told by a couple of people that the Leafs and Oilers have had some discussions about player moves. No surprise. We know David Nonis was there. We know these teams, I was going to say these teams match up, but frankly, the Oilers match up with just about everybody in the NHL because of their forward depth. Renaud threw out the name Nail Yakupov. And Nail Yakupov, Gord, my first reaction is in Toronto, I mean, he'll be chewed up, spit out. We'll never see him again. He'll end up going over to the KHL and being a third line winger in the KHL. But do you think the Leafs at some point this year will look at bringing in another skilled player, somebody who could possibly play on one of those top two lines? Because I think what we're getting at here is one of the reasons that the top two lines might be a work in progress is they're just, frankly, there may not be enough offensive talent in that among that group of six right now.
Yeah, I was there for the 48-game abbreviated season, and it wasn't so much there last year. And you know, on paper, again, on paper, but Joffre Leupold should be able to provide it. And again, he was a bit frustrated because he was on that second line last year, and it wasn't as a line getting it. I think, Jeff, it keeps coming back to Nazem Kadri, and they have a tough choice. His contract's up. He's a restricted free agent, and his body of work is inconclusive as far as the kind of money you know he's going to be looking for and what the Leafs are prepared to pay. And I think, Jeff, that's where they may have to make a decision along those lines. But you're right about, you've got to have two lines giving some, you know, giving some scoring balance. The Eric Staal deal that was talked about. Now, Greg Milne, I was chatting with him last night. He knows Ron Francis quite well and everybody in Carolina. He claims that the Carolina sources say there was no truth to that whatsoever. It seemed like a logical one because you basically flip Staal in for Kadri, and then you give up one of your top young D on, you know, studs that way.
And Gord, I was just going to say, as someone who's a former GM, you know, sometimes those trades that are so easy that look so logical, those are the ones that never get made.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like sometimes I remember you read them in the paper and you feel like going, well, if you can make this deal for me, make it. Great. I'm loving it. God, that would be dynamite if only the other guy felt the same way the Toronto Sun or Toronto Star or Globe or Mail or National Post was reporting it. So that's exactly it. And you know, Jeff, as we talk, we're going to get into this up till trade deadline. All we're talking about is trades. All we talk about trades, and really it's all the other things that's That's the added spice, the last piece. That's the Marion Gaborik that you add. But all the other things have to be in place like they were for the Los Angeles Kings. And, you know, for the Leafs, it's the play of Nazem Kadri. What is he? Elevating it to more that lockout season. And, again, the young D, the old D, all those other elements. But, you know, we'll keep talking trade. And Mail Yakubov, let's face it, the Oilers are worried and wonder what he is. And there is fear. Could he go back, go to the KHL, whatever. So that's, of course, they want to talk him up. Mm-hmm. Because that's the one young guy they're willing to throw out there. But every team has a lot of trepidation and, you know, doesn't want to give up a ton for him right now. And why would they?
No, I think you need to see a lot more from him before. If you're the Leafs, Gord, the last thing you want right now is to make a deal for another guy that you don't know about. You know, yeah, we're adding, you're not, Nail Yakupov might be a great player, but right now he doesn't scream guaranteed second line forward to me.
Well, and then again, I'm going back a number of years, but the big, you know, the deals can't be made anymore like Cliff did with Calgary for salary cap reasons. But Cliff always said he'd been a general manager 20 years at that point. He said it was just very unique because for the one time ever, he knew the players on the team he was acquiring from rather than his own team at that point, because he'd only been general manager of Toronto for a few months. And that's exactly it, you know, getting a read and really knowing what you're getting. And that's always the hardest thing to gauge, and that's why pro scouting and everything else is so, so important.
Speaking of front offices, Gord, we haven't had a chance to talk since Mark Hunter was hired as director of player personnel by the Toronto Maple Leafs. What do you make of that hiring? And more importantly, is it a further indication to you that David Nonis is in the process of being marginalized by this management group?
Yeah, I don't know if the terms were marginalized, and certainly he probably looks at the 4 years remaining on his 5-year contract, that's a nice way to be marginalized. But, you know, he has the title, but it's Brendan Shanahan's team. And Brendan, by what he's done with the coaches, the general managers, everything else, I mean, he's put that impact imprint on the team. And I don't think David Nonis really quibbles about it, but that's, you know, my understanding. And let's face it, Shanahan's roots are London. This is his hire. You can, you know, Hunter can say he talked to both of them, which I know he did, but let's face it, it was instigated by Brendan Shanahan that way. So my only thing is, the quantity is okay. It sounds great. I just hope it's an efficient front office, and I'm not saying it's not. I just, you know, at person after person after person being hired, I just hope they're being used effectively and efficiently and allowed to do their jobs, and there's a unity there, because, you know, quite often if you have an unwieldy and it lacks structure and whatever, it's, you can have all these great names, but it's not functioning the way it should. And that, to me, that's going to be the biggest challenge for Brendan Shanahan to have that in place, you know, including Dave Nonis and everybody else involved there. So you who can quibble with the Mark Hunter hire? But you've got Bobby Carpenter, and you've got Jim Hughes, and you've got all kinds of guys, and I just hope, and good guys. Mm-hmm. But I just hope it's being run efficiently rather than more guys in the mix, which at that point guys get territorial and a lot of other things, and it can become a negative.
Gord, it was good of you to do this. Thanks so much.
Sounds good. Have a good one, Jeff.
You too. That is Gord Stellick. He is co-host of Leafs Nation pre- and post-game and Hockey Nation Saturdays from 5 to 7 p.m. in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Of course, he's also part of our Hockey Central coverage as well. Just to give you a rundown on the NHL schedule for these next 2 days, these next 2 nights. Sportsnet 1 tonight, we'll have the Vancouver Canucks and the Colorado Avalanche. That is at 9 p.m. again on Sportsnet 1. And Rogers NHL Game Center Live at 9:30. You've got the Carolina Hurricanes at the Edmonton Oilers. 7 p.m. you've got the Dallas Stars at the New Jersey Devils. 8 p.m. is the Lightning and the Winnipeg Jets. And 10 bells is the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Anaheim Ducks tomorrow. Of course, the usual slate of soccer in the morning. We've also got Game 3 of the World Series tonight. Should mention Sportsnet Ontario, 7 o'clock World Series pregame show with Campbell and Zahn. 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, the one and only Mike Wilner will have his Blue Jay a Day pregame show. Casey Janssen will be joining him 7 o'clock. Chance to perhaps have your last opportunity to talk to Casey Janssen, who's a free agent and will not be back this year with the Blue Jays. Casey Janssen will join Wilner at 7 o'clock and take your calls. And, of course, the game will be at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Tomorrow, being Saturday, we've got the usual plethora, and I mean plethora of games starting at 6:30 on Sportsnet 1 and CBC with Hockey Central Saturday. 7 p.m. on CBC Hockey Night in Canada, the Boston Bruins against the Toronto Maple Leafs. 7 p.m. on City, the Rangers, the Montreal Canadiens. 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 1, the New Jersey Devils at the Ottawa Senators. 7 p.m. on 360, the Detroit Red Wings and the Philadelphia Flyers. 8 p.m. on FX Canada, my Blackhawks against the St. Louis Blues. That should be a terrific matchup. It always is. 10 p.m. on CBC Hockey Night in Canada, game two of the doubleheader. Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals against the Calgary Flames. So there you go. That is the rundown. That is the sked for hockey tonight and tomorrow. Again, game three of the World Series goes tonight. Game four of the World Series is tomorrow as well. You can catch that on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And we'll go from there. It's a lot of hockey. And, of course, hometown hockey on Sunday. Rogers hometown hockey from Saskatoon, the home of Gordie Howe. And that'll be a terrific presentation. Got a lot ahead in the show today. Real mixed bag. Mark Edelman, law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, will join us in a few minutes. We're going to talk about the decision by U.S. Judge Barbara Jones to make Roger Goodell testify at Ray Rice's hearing. Kevin Barker of Baseball Central will join us at 10 o'clock. A lot to talk about, Kevin. Talk about with Kevin. The World Series gets going again tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit about a lot of these reports that the Blue Jays are getting feelers from other teams for Adam Lind. Probably not a great surprise given his ability to hit right-handed pitching. I'll talk a little bit about ticket prices. I know that's a big issue for a lot of people out there. We'll take calls. 10:40, Rob Harris, the Associated Press soccer reporter, will join us. We'll get you set for a big, big weekend of Premiership soccer. This is going to be a lot of fun at 11 o'clock. Lyndon Byers, one of our favorites, co-host of the Hillman Morning Show on WAAF 97.7, 107.3 in Boston. He will join us to talk about the Bruins and where the Bruins go now that they won't have Zdeno Chara for 4 to 6 weeks. Jack McCallum, author of 7 Seconds or Less and Dream Team. He will join us. He's a guy who wrote a book about Steve Nash's time with the Phoenix Suns. And John Herdman, head coach of the Canadian National Women's Soccer Team, will join us ahead of their friendly against Japan as the Canadian Women's Team continues preparations for the Women's World Cup, which will be held here in Canada in 2015. Mark Edelman, New York University School of Law, will join us. We're going to talk a little bit about the significance of Roger Goodell being told he has to testify in a hearing regarding Ray Rice's appeal. This is something a lot of people have been waiting for. And I think for a lot of people who followed this case, the idea of knowing what Roger Goodell knew, when he knew it, and how he exercised the authority he has, those are some of the things that I think people who are following this case are desperately interested in knowing. Mark Edelman joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we are back. Kevin Barker of Baseball Central and Sportsnet 590, The Fan, will join us at 10 o'clock as we get you set for Game 3 of the World Series tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and on Sportsnet Ontario as well. The Giants looking to rebound after having their you-know-what handed to them by the Kansas City Royals in the second game of the World Series. After they, of course, basically filleted the Royals in the first game. Be nice to get a close. Be nice to get a close World Series game, especially since it's Friday night. So a lot of us who work in the morning can stay up till 2 or 3 to see the game through to its conclusion. Actually, the games haven't been taking that long this year, I don't think. I have to admit, I remain amazed by the way the Royals won the second game of the series. And I'm not saying I thought it was entirely out of the question that they would win it, because a lot of their hitters have some pretty good numbers against Jake Peavy, but I just did not expect that win to come from a bullpen implosion by the San Francisco Giants, and maybe even a little bit of mismanaging from Bruce Bochy, which is, that's funny. I was talking to someone yesterday, exchanged emails with a friend of mine who's covering the World Series, and the guy laughed and said, "What does it tell you about Bruce Bochy that all the stories about him mismanaging and maybe how he misused his bullpen in that particular inning, that they weren't written until the day after that game?" Because on deadline, there's a lot of things going through your mind as you write a game story. The fact that Bruce Bochy may have made a mistake, we're so used to Bruce Bochy being such a good manager and making so many of the right decisions under pressure and in times of stress, we're so used to that the very concept that Bruce Bochy may actually have screwed up in game is so foreign to people that you don't realize it until you've had a chance to leave the ballpark and maybe go out for beer and go, "Wow, I can't believe he did that." So we'll see what happens in game three. And again, Mike Wilner will have Casey Jansen on his Blue Jay A Day pregame show at 7 o'clock tonight. Casey will take your calls. It'll probably be the last time you get to talk to Casey Jansen while he's still a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. Big news in the NFL yesterday, big news off the field. The Ray Rice appeal continues to wind its way through the system, continues to wind its way to an inevitable conclusion. The twist, or the most recent twist, came about as a result of the appeal officer who was jointly selected by the NFL and the NFL Players Association, U.S. Judge Barbara S. Jones. She has decided that Roger Goodell has to testify under oath at Ray Rice's appeal. There are apparently no preset limits on the questioning, and this is kind of interesting. The interrogator will be Jeffrey Kessler. Now, you may know that name. We've had him on the show a couple of times. He's been involved in several landmark sports court cases. He represented the limited partners of the Montreal Expos in their lawsuit against Jeffrey Lurie and David Sampson, gosh, 5-6 years ago. I mean, there literally hasn't been a significant sports court case that Jeffrey Kessler hasn't sort of been associated with. Mark Edelman is a law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, City University of New York. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Edelman. And Mark Edelman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mark, thanks so much for doing this morning. Why am I not surprised that the name Jeffrey Kessler popped up here?
Well, I practiced with Jeffrey for a few years earlier in my career. He is by far and away the most intelligent and well-versed sports attorney I've worked with. And based upon his expertise over many years, he's involved in just about every matter that involves the NFL and NBA players and their players' union. There is absolutely nobody in the country, perhaps the world, that would have a better shot at cross-examining Roger Goodell, not only based on his litigation ability, but based on his very long background representing the NFL players and their union.
Now, it sounds like, Mark, in addition to that, DeMaurice Smith, the NFLPA executive director, he may be doing the questioning. There's also a report that Peter Ginsburg, who is another lawyer who has been a, I don't know if I'd say a nemesis, but he's certainly familiar, shall we say, to the NFL power brokers, that he may be involved at all. Try to put this into legal perspective for me. What is Roger Goodell facing right now legally?
There are going to be many issues at play here. The most important one is whether Roger Goodell had the power under the NFL collective bargaining agreement, first, to indefinitely suspend Ray Rice at all, and second, whether he had the right to do that after putting in place a two-game suspension for Ray Rice, and third, whether he had the right to do that after saying that the suspensions for anyone that engaged in domestic abuse was six games. So I think there are various different levels on which Roger Goodell's behavior is really subject to challenge in terms of violating the collective bargaining agreement. Now, you threw out a few names of people who could potentially be involved, and they each would seem to have a very different role.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Kessler has historically been the lead litigator in all matters for the NFL Players Association for more than the past 25 years. And it seems that Jeffrey Kessler would be involved in cross-examining Roger Goodell in this proceeding from the standpoint of representing the Players Association's interest.
Okay.
And the union overall would seem to have a big problem with the idea of a single suspension being articulated and then changed. You also mentioned Peter Ginsburg, and people are probably wondering why all these people involved. Ginsburg has really built his name not representing the players' union, but by representing individual players. Most recent to this, it was Wilma in the incident with the New Orleans Saints and Bountygate.
Mm-hmm. I think he also represented, didn't he, the two Vikings players who about what was happening? They were suspended for using the star caps, the sort of performance enhancing substance.
The year before, that's right.
Right.
So he probably, if he's involved, would be doing this from representing the interest of Ray Rice, especially if the interest of Ray Rice in some way departs from that of the union overall.
Mm-hmm. What could happen here?
I think Ray Rice has an incredibly strong case. Forget for a moment whether we like Ray Rice as a person. And forget for a moment how bothered we are by Ray Rice's domestic abuse conduct. And even more so, having seen it on television. The league and the Players Association agreed to give the commissioner the power to suspend, but that power was a singular power. And Roger Goodell, maybe intelligently, maybe foolishly, opted for a two-game suspension. And that was on par with what domestic abuse in the past has been in the NFL. Maybe that's a good policy, maybe that's a terrible policy. Irrespective, once that punishment is given, that was his first action, and you would expect Ray Rice to be back after Game 3. Then all of a sudden, Roger Goodell sees this video, gets a lot of backlash, and decides we have to treat domestic violence more seriously. So he changes domestic violence penalties moving forward to six games. And again, maybe that's a good thing, maybe that's a bad thing, but Rice already had his suspension. Then he turns around and says Ray Rice's suspension is going to be indefinite.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be the two he already gave Rice. It's not going to be the six that he said the new policy is. He just pulled something out of thin air. And that is going to be very difficult for a neutral arbitrator to uphold because it seems to go directly under the requirements of the league collective bargaining agreement and directly under a directive that Goodell even put in place himself.
Mark Edelman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. You made the point about, and this is going to be difficult, I think, for fans, separating what we may think about Ray Rice and how reprehensible his actions were, separating that from the fact that the commissioner from a distance, it appears he certainly has overstepped his boundary. I mean, the whole... I don't even know if you would technically call this double jeopardy, Mark, but that whole notion is very important in the rule of law and in the adjudicating of issues, isn't it? The whole idea that you can't sort of be tried or you can't be convicted twice for the same thing after a conviction has come down or after a suspension has come down, whatever, after a penalty has come down. I mean, that's a fairly important tenet in any whether it's a court case or in any society, that you shouldn't be subject to that.
And perhaps it's even worse. Perhaps it's actually triple jeopardy here.
True.
Because the piece that we haven't spoken about was after the two-game suspension was put in place for Ray Rice, the next step was that the Ravens released Ray Rice from their roster. Although the collective bargaining agreement does not specifically talk about double jeopardy of a player, there is a provision in there that prevents double punishment of a player for off-field wrongdoing. Only the commissioner or the team could punish. You can't have both. So you have this really weird situation where the commissioner put in place a punishment, which technically should preclude the team from then issuing a punishment, but the team did so as well, and Ray Rice is now challenging that and arguing for money for wrongful termination. And then after the team punished, Goodell did yet again. So even if theoretically, and I don't think it's right, but even if theoretically Roger Goodell was able to punish and then increase the punishment, the fact that the Ravens took action against Ray Rice intermittently clearly prevents Roger Goodell from stepping in and doing so, because once the team takes action, the league can't, and that's explicitly in the CBA.
It also appears as if Ravens president Dick Cass and Ozzie Newsome will also have to appear. And in some ways, Mark, that those depositions are going to be almost as interesting, because I think they may help flesh out just what the commissioner's thought process, it's the only phrase that comes to mind, but what his thought process was from the first time he heard about this incident until that news conference.
I think that's very right. And interestingly here, this is so different from what the arbitrator Frederick Horowitz decided in the Alex Rodriguez case. When Rodriguez was appealing his case to Frederick Horowitz, Bud Selig was able to avoid being called to testify. Here, not only do we have Roger Goodell having to issue a statement, but whatever he says would be subject to challenge and impeachability. And this is a very big moment for the NFL players, because you have a commissioner who's walked in and taken this Kenesaw Mountain Landis, I set the rules, I run the whole show mentality. And this is the very first opportunity under Roger Goodell where not only are the players getting true neutral arbitration of a Goodell decision, but it could be challenged on its very merits. And you know, Goodell might walk away from this, even in the public, not looking as pristine as he's tried to present himself over the years.
Well, I was going to say, Mark, too, the takeaway I get from this is that regardless of what is said in this room, we're starting to see a transformation in how much power the NFL commissioner has, aren't we? I mean, this seems to me to be a case. I don't want to say I hate talking to a lawyer and using the word case, but it would seem to me to be the perfect example of what happens when too much power is concentrated in one person's hand and there's not enough thought for due process.
I agree with you very much. And along the same lines, if you go back to when the last NFL collective bargaining agreement was reached, the one that DeMaurice Smith signed with the league right after the Brady litigation ended, I'm sure your listeners remember quite well that it looked like there was going to be no start to the NFL season, and everyone said there was no way it could happen, and lo and behold, the players and teams reached a new agreement and got back on the field even for the last couple of preseason games. One of the very important things that the Players Association certainly should have ironed out before ending the dispute and reaching a new CBA was to make sure there was neutral arbitration. The Players Association failed to do so, and it was a very big failure, in my eyes, by DeMaurice Smith and the Players Association. Nevertheless, after this Ray Rice fiasco and Goodell being involved and not being involved and then recusing himself, in this one particular case, the Players Association were able to get that very important right or opportunity that they failed to bargain for. And to me, that's so interesting.
Mark, I appreciate you doing this as always. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure. Glad to be on.
That's Mark Edelman. He's the law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, City University of New York. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Edelman. Roger Goodell having to testify under oath as part of the Ray Rice appeal process. It will be fascinating to find out what he knew, when he knew it, and how he went about making his decision. I'll tell you this. Roger Goodell will emerge from this a different guy. He will emerge from this with his powers stripped immensely. And indeed, the office of the NFL commissioner will emerge from this hearing drastically changed. Game 3 of the World Series goes tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on Sportsnet. Mike Wilner has a pregame show at 7 o'clock with Casey Janssen, his Blue Jay a Day pregame show. You can call in, talk to Casey at 7 o'clock. Kevin Barker of Baseball Central will help get us set for that game. And we'll take your calls as well. Kevin Barker next when the Jeff Blair Show continues right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.